What's up, guys? Welcome to this very special episode of the Friday Sessions. We have a special guest with us today, all the way from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. He is a friend of the pod. Many of you have heard from him before, but not what you are going to hear today. This is a real deep dive into why this young Australian moved to Dubai, what it was like, what the tax system actually is. It will blow your mind when you learn this. Why he believes that moving to a country like that is so powerful for young people that are looking to create wealth. It was a really fascinating discussion we got into at the end, some of the other issues going on in Australia right now and what we believe the solutions are. I think you are going to really love this one. It is a super interesting episode and we thank you for being here. With that said, let's dive right in. We'll see you on the other side. All right, so guys, we are joined by a special guest this morning in place of James Denham, who is unavailable today, but we are very, very privileged to have us with us, Raf, who is coming in hot, literally, from Dubai. Raf is a friend of the, man. Yeah, Raf is a friend of the pod. He's been on the pod a few times in the past. He is the king of TikTok. He's a legend of a human. Welcome to the pod. Mark, what's up? Eric, what's up?
Hey,
welcome
what's going
on? What's going on, guys?
So, guys, after last week, we had a lot of chit-chat in the comments about this whole discussion of relocating. It was quite fascinating to look in the comments and see, you know, like, you know, Raf, you've relocated from Australia to Dubai. We had the haters going, why would anybody ever go to Dubai? It's a sand pit. And isn't Dubai built on slave labor? And, you know, like, whatever. Grab the straws to make yourself feel better. But I think it'd be interesting, Raf, to sort of get a bit of a on-the-ground, you know, what it's like there. What I'd like to know is, like, you're a young entrepreneur. Paint us a bit of a picture about your age, what you were doing, what you're doing, and then tell us, why did you, like, move to Dubai? Like, what was it that made you leave the lucky country and move to a sandpit?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd frame it like that, but I've been in the entrepreneurial game for a while, but I used to be a primary school teacher, and then I was started my own products and then exited those, which is great. And then as my businesses grew, I love Australia. Australia is awesome to raise a family. Love that. I love the people in Australia. But man, this one thing that kept going over and over in my head, and I think it's a Scott Galloway quote, and he says, wealth is a byproduct of opportunity density. And where I was living in Brizzy and before I was in Sydney, the density of opportunity just wasn't there. Like, there are pockets, but it's kind of spread out. And because Dubai is a hub and the way that it is, because so many people are visiting, there's so much serendipity and meetings of people you just wouldn't get access to, because now you can just go get a coffee or lunch with someone who's just flying through, because it's a hub globally. People are flying through, staying a couple nights and then flying out. So that was one piece, just like getting opportunity density is a massive thing, man. Like the meetings that I've had, the opportunities just, and I've only moved here so recently, and man, 10x in the last 5 years in Australia. In the last 5 months here in Dubai, it's insane.
Yeah, that's interesting, because most people, sorry about the background noise here, I've got bikes going by and gorgeous with Lemon Soul Cypress, but they love loud things. So you know, I find it interesting because so many people, and I'm sure you may have experienced this, certainly not maybe to your face, but maybe behind your back, people are saying, oh, but you just moved to Dubai for tax, right? What's your
straight to my face, mate. Yeah.
I'll teach that to your face. Yeah. They are Australians. That's one thing. There are many things that shy ain't one of them. You know, the same thing with me. What is your comments about that? Like, you know, like how much was tax a component of your thinking, and how much of it was the opportunity density and these other aspects? Because how old are you, Raf, for example?
33.
Okay. So how much of it was tax and how much of it was these other matters? What else was going through your mind apart from just saving tax?
I think tax was about 50% of my equation. I'm not going to lie. Like, that was a big component. But also, like, I've only got a few swings in me at my age, right? So maybe two or three more swings at this age. I mean, I'm being honest, like really big swings, things that take maybe 8 years at a time, right? So it's just like, so if I'm able to compound my growth, not just financially from a tax perspective, but from an opportunity perspective, like work is the same. You're going to work as hard on a small thing as you are on a big thing. So how can I make sure I'm entering in a pool where my comparison is people that start at nine-figure businesses. So it's like, okay, I'm just not even playing at that game. So it's like, where do I need to focus on? And I can get advice and mentorship and connections I just couldn't possibly get just through osmosis. I'm not even asking someone to be a mentor. It's just like, I can just see what they're working on, what they're focusing on. And that was a massive push for me. Cause I'm like, at this age, my parents aren't that old yet. So the older they get, I'm going to be back in Australia to take care of them. I just will. So like, I don't have that much time to do it. So like, this was the time to go ahead and do it. And man, just the opportunities that have come my way just from being here is just insane. Just ways of living, just ways of thinking about money, ways of thinking about investing, like opportunities for business. Yeah, night and day, man. Night and day, dude.
And how
which
you
is
like,
interesting. Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry. It's interesting because I'm talking to a guy who built his business. I know you're in the US for a while, but you're also in Australia for the majority of it. So I guess I want to throw it back to you. You went to the States when you're like really scaling. Did you see a contrast between Australia and the States? Now, obviously, we're talking about like Dubai and Cyprus, but did you find a difference with the caliber of people and businesses that were happening?
Yeah, look, I went to LA for what you said, opportunity density. I love that phraseology. Scott Galloway is the boss. I love that dude.
Legend.
And I moved to LA for that reason. I was on the Gold Coast. I've done business in Australia my whole life. And I just wanted to go to a bigger market for that opportunity density. So I went to LA for that. And once I got to LA, it stretched my brain in ways that I just can't explain. It's the same as when you go to Dubai, you know, there's this excitement and anticipation and everything's new. And if nothing else, you feel super alive going and taking on a new life in a fresh city where you can reinvent yourself and start again. And I think a lot of Aussies right now listening to this are like, damn, that sounds so appealing. Like I'm just ready for change. And I'm certainly feeling that. That's what I did in 2011. And I got off the plane with my girlfriend at the time. We rented an apartment and then I joined a co-working space. And immediately I was surrounded by 100 entrepreneurs who are all working on a startup. And so literally to this day, I'm in business now in a business with a guy who was in a room next to me in WeWork Hollywood. I was the first tenant in WeWork California when they only had 9 locations worldwide, right? And I met Adam Newman and all these sorts of things. Like I met Adam Newman. I had a meeting with him and the founder of Under Armour, Kevin Plank, who's worth about $6 billion back then. Met some unbelievable people by relocating me to a density-rich environment. So, yeah, I went for that and it changed my life entirely. And then when I came back to Australia 5 years later, I was a different human. Like my brain was different. The way I thought was different. The way I looked at business was different. And I was at a time where I might have had one more swing in me. And I love that, how you said, I've got a few swings in me. And for all the listeners in this, listen to what Raf said there. You're going to do the work anyway. Why not put yourself in a place that's optimized for your outcome, which is to create wealth? And Dubai, I'm going to read something just quickly that I read this week about Dubai that just came out today, actually. Dubai property sales in May hit $18 billion. Which is up 44% year on year, right? Relative to Australia, sales of 18. So Australian sales for the same period were about 8. So Dubai has a population of 4.5 billion. Sorry, let me start all this again. I read this today, right? So Dubai property sales, $18 billion for May, Australia, about 8 billion, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Dubai has a population of 5 million. Australia has a population of 27 million. In other words, real estate investment in Dubai right now is more than double for the month of May than what the entire country of Australia is with a population of 20%.
I know where I'd want to be a real estate agent.
Right. Something like 1 in 10 people in Dubai are real estate agents. Something like that's crazy. No, very interesting. It shows you how much it is booming. You can say, all you guys who want to be heroes in the comments and jump in, to buy this, to buy that. At the end of the day, go to Dubai and have a look at how they're doing. And I'll tell you right now, it's booming.
It's funny, right? Like those people in the comments that are sitting at home angry on their keyboards, worrying away at people and comments like that, they're probably the people who need a move most. Like what I'm finding at the moment, it's like the old saying, you're not a tree, you can pick up and move. And I think so much of people's, I don't know, I don't want to call it depression because that's a pretty harsh word, but so much of people's like maybe stagnation or lack of energy or negativity is because they're stuck around the same people that they grew up around. And these people, you know, may have modest careers or modest jobs or whatever, God bless them, right? But then they're going online and they're seeing all these people doing these incredible things, and they're kind of, and there's kind of like a disconnect, there's kind of like a conflict between what they're seeing online and what's happening within their community. Like I told a family member very close to me recently, I think you kind of need to pick up and get yourself into new communities, whether it be online or literally, because there's never been a time in history where you can put yourself in and around people who are doing things that may be more aligned to your true north. And I think a lot of people are feeling a little bit stuck. So, you know, it's natural for their first impressions or responses to be like, oh no, fuck that shit. There's got to be a reason why that wouldn't work, because it's scary to have to pick up and make that move like you guys have done, right?
Sometimes, Mark, it can be just a move interstate as well. But Raph, Raph, let's get back to you. So you made the decision to move from Brisbane, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You were in Brisbane. You made the decision to move to Dubai. Tell us about the process. Like, you, how long did it take you to plan it? You know, how did you feel like getting on the plane and then landing in Dubai and finding a home? Like, talk us through the actual boots on the ground process. And then when you did get there, what did you do from a business point of view to meet people and get out there?
Mm. So my pathway is not something I recommend or is the most optimal way. I'm sort of black and white with my decisions. So if I see like an opportunity, I will take the opportunity faster because it's easier to reverse a decision of a two-way door. So if I move somewhere, I can always move back. So that's a two-way door. So I'm like, okay, why am I going to waste time thinking about it if I can go ahead and do it? So my idea to mapping out to actually taking action is pretty fast. So to give you an idea, I had the thought of this and it was like last year around like February. It took, the longest part was convincing my wife. So that took about like 5 months. And I did it all on spreadsheets with the numbers and all this stuff. She's very number driven. So I was like, all right, cool. And then last September, we visited Dubai for the very first time. At this point, never visited, right? I was just like, I need to get into an environment. I'll make it happen. We were here for 2 weeks, got our apartment sorted, got our co-working space sorted, got our electricity, AC, and all that sorted in 2 weeks, flew back, packed up everything, and then moved at the end of November. Like, that was it. It was just like, boom. And don't recommend that process because it was stressful, but I'm like, if it sucks, I can just come back. And that's what I kept telling myself. And I told my wife the same thing. Like, hey, worst case scenario, we lose a little bit of money here and there. It doesn't really, not much. And then we come back. So I was like, okay, cool. So as I was landing, it was interesting because I didn't think of Australia as a very green place. And then when I got here, I'm like, wow, Australia is like lush. Everything is so green. I miss the smell of the eucalyptus trees. You know, I miss all the birds and stuff. So that was a stark contrast. I'm going to be honest. There are things to love about Dubai and things not to love.
Do they got fake birds there yet, though?
Surely. I mean, you know what's crazy? Okay. I went to the Museum of the Future here, and they literally had this electronic massive whale type bird flying through this mausoleum space. And it was crazy. Like, there's stuff here from a technology perspective that I've just never come across. The interesting thing is, like, from a technology perspective here in Dubai, and I'm sure other places are like this as well, they kind of skipped the dial-up phase, the slow growth. They just went from like pre-dial-up to like internet everywhere. Like, everywhere has super high speed internet. Like, to give you an idea here, my download speed is 800 megabytes a second. My upload speed is 500 megabytes a second. And that's the base level. The speed of internet is crazy. The adoption of technology, it's like they're doing stuff that I'm like, oh, this is possible. And it's like so convenient and so easy. It's shocking, man.
How do you find meeting people? Yeah. How do you find that? Like, how's that going for you?
Man, the interesting thing is there's so many people that come here, and I'm sure Cyprus is similar. Malta is probably a little bit similar as well. People who go to Thailand as well. You're almost, there's such a filter. So for people that move here that weren't born here, they have to be a certain type of person to actually end up here. And so the likelihood of you finding a like-minded person is just so high because you've passed all these filters. And since you don't know anyone, everyone is trying to look to meet people. And so the ease of conversations, business partnerships, meetings is just like so easy. I've met more people here, and I'm not like an introvert. Like, I'll go out and talk to people. I've met more people here in the last 5 months around the same space that I've been than the last 2 years in Brizzy. And it's just opportunity density, man. It's crazy.
And you're in a co-working space. Tell us about that. Like, whereabouts are you living? Whereabouts is the co-working space? What's the vibe like in that co-working space? What's happening there?
Man, there's people from all different places. So I'm downtown in Dubai. So I didn't go to, like, there's the marina and stuff like that where people kind of want to chill and party. Like, I'm here to work. I'm here to, like, build. So, like, I'm downtown in Dubai. And so the co-working space is literally just across the road from me. So I just walk there. And there's businesses from, they've started, like, a crypto exchange. Somebody's got, like, a trading platform for stocks. Obviously, there's real estate in there. There's e-commerce business owners. There's people in all these different pockets. And so I have conversations with each of them to understand what they're doing in their business. Well, maybe I can learn something here. There's somebody who's, like, trading full-time. And they're just a single person. And they can do it from anywhere. So they're just like, oh, I'm just trading, you know, like on 2 hour, 1 hour time frames, stocks and like puts and calls. That's all they do. And they're multimillionaire. It's just like, that's all they're doing. And it's just like, oh, interesting. So you can understand different ways of living, different ways of thinking, different ways of running business. And that's just in one co-working space across the road. And from I've obviously been invited to so many meetings right after that, which has been fun.
And events and parties and things going on. Yes. And that's, for people who want to relocate, these are the first things I did in LA, and the first things I'm doing here, I'm going and getting in a co-working space. I'm going onto meetup.com and finding where the next meetup is around things I'm interested in, and I just turn up and put my hand out and say hello. And do you feel alive? Like, how do you feel when you, like, you move into your new apartment, you move into the new co-working space? Tell us about the emotional side of it and the spiritual side of it.
Man, I mean, I think... So that first feeling you feel is most likely, and most humans will feel this, will a sense of like, okay, imposter syndrome, should I be here? But imposter syndrome is actually a symptom of growth. So if you're not feeling that, you're not actually growing. So it's like, okay, I've like learned myself to feel like, okay, that nervous feeling, that's a good feeling. And then it's just excitement and like intense curiosity. Okay, how did your life lead you here? What is it that you're doing? And people are so willing to share these things, which is so exciting. And I think the most important thing, and I know we're talking about like Dubai, we've talked about Cyprus and all these things. What, to Mark's point, like maybe it could just be an interstate move. And if you can get around and change your environment, you can change your behavior. And then the excitement you feel and then the opportunities that you get and the ways of thinking is just something that you couldn't get anywhere else. You couldn't get from a book, you know, just being in it. Your brain is soaking in it, you know, which is fantastic.
Eric and I are dealing with some Dubai people at the moment. Like I'm doing some stuff with a company out of Dubai founded by Australians, which we're going to be sharing info on soon. But we're also bringing in for our Freedom Summit coming up a young lady who relocated from New Zealand, did exactly what you did. She just looked around and said, I'm out of here. She relocated to Dubai, got into real estate, and now has a niche of helping New Zealanders and Australians relocate to Dubai and get the golden visa, and she sells real estate. And she's got that angle because she's from there and she's crushing hard. And so she's coming on. But what we're realizing, Eric, you might want to affirm this, but the energy and the enthusiasm and the follow-up and the passion from these people like Raf, who've grabbed themselves and plonked themselves in a new place, their hunger and their alertness and their attentiveness is just so much higher. Like the emails that we're getting and the invitations that we're getting now, because we're planning a trip to go out there just after the summer. Eric, maybe you could comment on like the difference between the energy of a Dubai-based operator to an Australian-based operator when both people are Australians.
I think don't mind me if I'm slurring a little bit. I just got Invisalign put into my teeth today, so nobody judge me and smash me in the comments again. But like a good friend of mine that I've been friends with for years, right, has lived in Sydney for a long time and moved to Dubai a few years ago. And like you said, it's a certain person that will move to Dubai. It's a certain person that will move to Cyprus, right? We've got people here that, you know, in many countries, not just Australia, that won't even take the plunge to start a business or set up an ABN, never mind go and, you know, move overseas. So we're talking to a very specific person here, right? And there's a lot of people in the community and subscribership and whatnot that are looking at these things, because we can see it from the comments and the questions in the DMs and stuff like that. But yeah, when I talk to my mate, I get so excited after I got off the phone, because he's telling me about all the opportunities and what he's doing there. And I literally get FOMO, right? So what do? I then ring, and this was yesterday, right? I then ring Adam and say, mate, there's an opportunity. This is what it is. It's a real estate opportunity. And this is the returns. This is the payment terms. And it's just so different than here that it's actually hard to believe, to be quite honest with you, right? Like, because we come from a place that everyone's fairly conservative, right? And numbers are fairly conservative here. And then when you go there and you talk to these guys that are actually moving and shaking and doing things, it's not just some random agent that you've met that is just talking, you know, shit in your ear, because I'm sure there's plenty of those people. We're talking about people with boots on the ground. And my man has literally moved, not just himself, his entire family, kids, school, all that stuff there, right? And again, is he going to be there forever? Maybe not. But the connections that he's making is unbelievable, right? And but what happens is when I then talk to him, I get excited. I then call my mates and go, hey, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. And then again, like Adam said, we're going to push to go there after your guy summer to go and check it out and really get amongst it, right? And start meeting people and the rest of it. Like he's met some amazing, amazing talent there. Just like you're saying, it is like the epicenter of the world. And it is now the epicenter of entrepreneurship, really. And the tax incentive is a obviously a massive benefit of that. But again, for someone to get started, if I had my time over now, knowing what I know, and I was younger like you, Raf, I've got you know, 9 years on you. So, and I've got kids, which again, we use that as excuses and roadblocks and the rest of it. But I would probably picked up and went, you know what, let's go to Dubai. We picked up and came to Australia, which has been an amazing move for us. But the opportunity, when I look at what you're doing there, and you just said that, right? Like you're 10Xing in 5 months what you've done in 2 years or whatever it was. Like yeah. That is massive scale. But again, you have a goal. One thing I want people to understand is Raph basically came on here and said, here, he most likely won't be there forever. He's there for a period of time to have those big swings, make his cash, and then come back home and spend time with his family, right? When they're in their, you know, 60s and 70s and the rest of it, and try and take care of them. So have a goal. You know, guys like Adam and Raph, they're not idiots, right? They're not just going to save tax. Because the reality is when you move to these places, I know Dubai, if you want to live a certain lifestyle in Dubai, it's not cheap, right? So the stuff that you guys are seeing on Instagram and TikTok of the Christian Dior day clubs and this type of thing, you've got to be making cash. You ain't going there and spending 100, 150 bucks, right? You're spending thousands of dollars. So don't get all hooked up on that. Look at Raf, right? He didn't go to the marina. Right. He went downtown Dubai. Why? Because he's got a goal. He doesn't need to be at the nightclubs and the rest of it. What he needs to be is in the right rooms, meeting the right people. And I know that you're doing that because I haven't been in contact with you for a little while, but Perry's been filling me in. And obviously we're going to be doing some stuff together in the future as well. And it's so exciting. But the energy that I get, it just mind blowing. And then I come home and then I talk to my missus about it and she gets excited. Let's set up a meeting. Let's set up time in our calendar so we can start actually discussing and planning things. Because a big thing for us is we want to move somewhere for at least 6 to 12 months outside of Australia. Just because one, because we can. And my missus is a bit of a gypsy. So if I say, hey, let's move to Dubai in 2 months, she's packing her bags today. Hell yeah. And not everyone is like that.
But it's a safe, look, it's a safe place. It's a central place. Like if you want to get out of Dubai for a minute, like you get, there's so many places you can go really cheaply because you're all the way over. Like, you know, I'm here in Cyprus. I can be in Dubai this afternoon on the same time zone. There's only an hour between Raph and I. And or he can be here, you know, chilling in Ayia Napa and partying with the London crew, you know. So
I'd love to dig into a little bit, if you don't mind, because we always say tax, tax, tax. But I want to dig into like, what does it actually mean, right? Coming from an Australian that sits here and goes, pays get BAS every quarter, superannuation, payroll tax, income tax, land tax, all these, we could keep going on, right? So how does it work there? Like, do you actually lodge taxes? Is there BASs? like how much tax are you actually paying? Because let's get into the nitty gritty. And I'd like to compare it to Cyprus as well, because you said 50% of the reason why you moved to Dubai, right, was tax. That's a high percentage. What's your percentage, Adam, as an example, for Cyprus?
12.5% corporate
tax. No, but what the percentage of you going, the reason why I came to Cyprus was 50% of the reason or 80% of the reason.
Similar,
right? So yeah, it's a high percentage, right? So
yeah, and my motivation was just slightly different because I'm 20 years older than Raf.
Yeah,
and I was like, I just want to maximize my position from this point.
So right now, Raf, if you don't mind, you're going there, you set up a company, you're invoicing out of that company. How does it actually work when it comes to bookkeeping and tax agents and how much tax do you actually pay? Not as a percentage, not as a value.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the hardest things for me to understand the tax here was I just assumed there's so much more that needed to be done. So I spoke to many accountants here and I kept asking these questions and they're like, what do you mean? We don't need to do any of this. What do you mean we don't need to do any of that? Because I'm from obviously the Australian tax. Everything is tracked, every little step. And so it's a 9% corporate tax. And that's only when you're above 800K a year at US. But if you're
in profit or revenue,
That's in profit. 800. But if you're under, But if you're below 3 mil in US in like total revenue in the year, you have a small business waiver, and it's actually 0%.
So what you're saying is.
I want to get this. No tax for rookies.
That's the thing, right?
So yeah. If you make 800,000 US in profit and you're not turning over more than $3 million, it's zero in tax.
Top line revenue.
Yeah. You poor bastards. Because of the
waiver. Yeah.
So when we say zero tax, it's zero tax. Like we're not talking
until that point. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no taxes in that sense at all. Like, so you have
once,
to set up your
once the plebs that are expensive. That are earning 800,000 US, which was probably about 1.3 to 1.4 million Aussie dollars, right? Once those plebs are moved aside and they're starting making real cash, what is then the tax rate?
it's 9% corporate tax, but you can take 50% after the expenses are taken out, 50% of the remaining that can be used for, you know, you like business dinners and stuff. You know how in Australia everything needs to be, and I'm not a tax accountant, this is not tax advice, it's just what I've learned so far, just disclaimer. You know how you have to say, okay, you know, this is a business dinner, you have to justify this staying over here for a meeting. You automatically, out of whatever profits left, 50% of that can be used for these discretionary things that help your business without any real documentation. Like it's unnecessary.
I've been keeping the piece of steak and the toothpick that gets stuck and put in a Ziploc bag for the evidence over here, man. That's how stringent it's becoming.
Man.
So what you're saying is there's basically a general acceptance that you can write off 50% of your turnover to discretionary operating expenses without any questions being asked.
Over 3 million. And that's, so you've already made 800,000 US, $1 million, whatever it is. And then so over 3 million, right? So you're now starting to hit big numbers, right? So all of a sudden you're making $2 million. What you're saying is, say the 800 grand you pay no tax on, and then the 1.2 million, you're paying a whopping 9%.
Yep. That's
provided. And that's it. When you pay the corporate tax, is there any tax on you personally after that?
No. Oh, individual is zero. I'm just talking corporate. Like
it's a corporate.
Okay, so you pay your company tax of 9%, and then on whatever you don't write off in dinners at the Dior nightclub, and the rest you just take tax free.
Yeah,
and you have to be there for 6 months, right, to be a tax citizen or not?
Yeah, so I mean, there are some rules around that. You need to be at least 6 months here out of the year. But like, I live here full time, and this is just like my home base now for the next decade probably.
Do you have to submit a tax return if you earn if you're in the small business waiver section? Do you still have to submit a return?
They started that at the end of 2023 or at the start of 2024. So yes, but it's like it's a one pager and it's like done. Very easy. Yeah.
And there's no sales tax, as in like there's like here obviously we got GST and BASs and the rest of it. There's none of that.
Sometimes. So like some people in the interesting thing that I find about Dubai is like, you know how we're in Woolies or in Coles, everything's sort of around the same prices, right? Mm-hmm. And so like Tim Tams are going to be $8 here and $8 here. It's just, it is what it is. But here in Dubai, you'll find like sometimes you'll go to an equivalent of Woolworths and the price of that product is much less and there's only a little bit of tax on it. And then you go to like a really expensive place like Dubai Mall and it's more expensive and there's more tax on it. So it just depends. So it's kind of like just sales tax added by the actual
but,
company.
But when I mean sales tax, not so much as purchasing, but for instance, there's no GST, like an equivalent of GST. So you're not doing any BASs. Now, for people in Australia that understand what PAYG is, right, pay as you go, tax. Is there anything like that that you got to top up tax as you go? So, for instance, if you've made, you know, $5 million and you pay 9%, right, which is 450 grand or whatever it is, the next year, you're not paying that monthly because they already know you've made the 450 prior. Whereas here, that's what happens, right? Your PAYG then goes up and you're going to be paying X amount per year because they're going to want their tax first. Yeah. There's nothing like that there.
No, because it crushes cash flow, man. I mean, these guys are so, they want businesses to come here. They wanted to build here. Obviously, tourism is one of the biggest levers, but this is a crypto hub. This is becoming obviously a online business hub here as well. And so they want to incentivize those smaller businesses, newer businesses under $3 million a year to like, just come here and build. And after that, the slap on the wrist or the pain is 9%, and that's it. You can just continue growing, you know, which
is for a lot of people listening to this, they don't really get what Eric's talking about there, where like in Australia, once you've done your first year of trade, if you make, you know, $1 million profit, they then start sending you the tax bill. So you pay $1 million, your tax on the mill, and then immediately in the first quarter of the following year, they give you an assessment notice of what they think you're going to make this year, and you got to start paying it now. And it just ruins your cash flow. Yeah. And these small businesses die. And this is just a stark difference, just to interject a little story
here.
In the ABC this week, they published a story about a Filipino contract worker who worked for a legal firm in Brisbane. She was getting paid $18 an hour, which is more than a pilot or a senior solicitor in the Philippines. They were paying her as an administrator in their business. She got dismissed because they suspected that she downloaded client files. She then sued in Fair Work Australia for unfair dismissal, and Fair Work Australia ruled in favour of the Filipino offshore worker who was getting $18 an hour. And so now this is a landmark case in Australia where Australia has now said, we will now represent the employment interests of contractors in every country around the world employed by Australians, and you could use up our courts and our publicly funded resources to claim fair working rights, even if you're not an Australian living in Australia. It has opened up massive exposure to all these small businesses in Australia that are using up workers, using freelancers because they can't afford Australian small business as it is. And we have an incentive system where if you hit $1 million of payroll, they then hit you with payroll tax as a thank you for employing more Australians. This is how backward Australia is as a country. So they've now completely, and they're going, no, we need to, like, you know, give the rest of the world equal rights. And they're just destroying small business in this country. And that's why you're going to see, like, when you listen to Raf talking about this, why would Raf stay in Australia and not go to Dubai, for example, and hire contractors and not be exposed to this ridiculous laws? It's just crazy. I've got mates ringing me now going, I'm exposed to this now. I'm able to get legal advice now because I have 15 offshore contractors, all of whom can now create a class action against an Australian small business owner who's paying them fairly.
That's fucking wild. That's wild. I was just doing a quick ChatGPT, Raf, on, because a lot of people at home would be thinking, well, fuck, I mean, our government taxes us up the wazoo so they can fund their spending, et cetera, et cetera. You know, how does Dubai fund itself? And ChatGPT says that the main ways it funds itself is through oil and natural gas reserves, state-owned enterprises like Emirates Airlines and Dubai Electricity, et cetera, fees, levies, and indirect taxes, so property registration fees, custom duties, et cetera, visa, tourism, real estate and land sales. So the government owns most of the land so they can sell or lease that land. And basically, you know, the US has a lot of land that they could sell and lease and monetize on their balance sheet as well. And we probably could too. And they do have a VAT tax, which is a 5% levy on goods and services. So, it's just interesting, right? That there are models and are different ways of doing things. And, you know, we're in the fortunate position where we have a lot of resources in our country as well. So it's not like, I don't know the logistics around making such changes. Like, it'd probably be a slow moving truck. But yeah, there are other alternatives than to continue to increase the tax rate on your citizens.
And one thing, I was doing this calculation actually over the week with my dad on numerous things. And he was, my dad's kind of not about like electric and, you know, he's not into Musk and all this stuff. He's a bit, you know, old school baby boomer. And then we're just going off fuel, right? And even if cars went to electric, as an example, how much fuel would planes still require every day? Because people need to understand, right, these dollar values and amounts to kind of understand how Dubai, what Mark just said, can actually fund these things and not have to do it through taxing their citizens. So I want to ask a question to you guys, all three. How many liters, right, per day of fuel, jet fuel, is used per day just on jets around the world? Would anyone have a wild guess?
I have no idea, I think what a lot of people don't realize is, even if we did go all electric, like electric vehicles,
this is what I'm saying. This is all electric. And solar, just planes, like if, just planes need fuel still, but the
requirements just to build out the electric grid requires so much oil and gas that it's just not funny. Like, people don't realize that. But I got no idea.
It's a crazy number, and you guys probably won't guess it, right? But it is roughly between 795 and 954 million liters every day. Wow. Right, every day.
What's that as the percentage of all the oil and gas or whatever oil?
Guys, I know this is an ad, but trust me, you want to watch this one because it is an absolutely ripping product for anybody who uses a computer. One of the things I hate the most in business is email and responding to YouTube comments on my computer here. This AI app is a game changer. What it does is it enables me to never type another email again. I'm going to show you how it works, but essentially, instead of typing, I have a key on my computer that I just push the key. I start talking. It dictates everything I said and uses AI to correct any words that it hears after I've trained it a few times where there's misspelling, and it just cuts my email response time in half and enables me to give much deeper, better emails to people. Just check this out. As soon as you see it, you'll see how it works. If you want to get it, there's a link beneath this video. It is insane. It's called Whisper AI. It's a game changer. Let me show you. So this is a scene you've all seen before, writing an email. But instead of going and writing and using my keys here to type in, I'm just going to push that little FN button and I'm going to read this straight in here. So watch this. Hi there. Thanks for watching the podcast. Have a great day. Let it go. Boom. There it is. And I hit send. That's it, guys. Click on the link below the video. Get signed up today. It will save you heaps of time. All my entrepreneurial friends are using it. You can thank me later. Let's get back to the pod.
But it gives you an idea on how big that actual network is and how places like, and most of it's coming from Abu Dhabi, not actually Dubai, but they're basically, you know, side by side. So that's how a lot of these people can fund these things. I mean, the country can fund these things, and someone like Australia that's so rich in resources as well, you know, should be doing the same thing, in my opinion. But
six to eight percent of total global oil consumption is aviation fuel.
Yeah,
but I think the lesson here is that Dubai is smart enough to know that the future is not oil, right?
Correct.
They're going to run out of oil at some point. So what they've done is they've gone, we've got to make Dubai competitive and appealing on a global basis, and they're working from literally a dust bowl to start with. So you've got to hand it to them. Like, they have not been given, apart from, you know, obviously they've been given a very, very strong hand with the oil reserves, but from a topography point of view, it's you cannot live there 2 months a year because it's too hot. It's got no greenery, as you said, Raf. And so they've invested so hard into, you know, giving $1 billion to Ronaldo to bring him there for the soccer. Why do they do that? Because they want to signal to the rest of the world, if it's safe enough for Ronaldo, it's safe enough for you to come here, like Eric, for you to bring your family. That's why they pay Ronaldo the $1 billion. It's not because they're soccer fans. They're just telling the world, this is a safe place.
And now they're getting massively into sport as well, right? Like you look at what they're doing with, LIV Golf. You look at what they're doing with boxing in the Ryder season, right? They're taking over sport. Now Dana White is partnering with them to take over boxing. And soccer, you know, they're owning all the big soccer teams now. So they're just going to slowly chip away. And I seen a stat today that one of the golfers, right, from what he was making in the PGA versus what he's making in LIV is 10 times. And let me tell you, everybody will come over at some point for the money. Sorry,
it's not. It's not just. It's. If you look at Trump and the Americans that were just over in the UAE. That who was there with him? Elon Musk, Carp from Palantir, Jensen Huang from NVIDIA. Like the UAE is going massive into AI as well. What frustrates me sitting here in Australia is I'm like, where is our leadership investing in all these frontier technologies that are not edge technologies?
They're gonna
They're going to be the future of the world. But no, we're busy worrying about Pride Month and fucking Welcome to Country and all the other fucking retarded things that we focus on.
Like protecting the rights of people that don't live in Australia and making sure that you didn't have any beers with your business lunch, you know, that you claimed unfairly, and making sure they get every last cent out of the evil small business owners instead of encouraging small business ownership and entrepreneurship. Raph, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just one thing, double click on the safety. I've traveled a lot and this is the safest place I've ever been to in my life, like bar none. I could leave my phone in a random cafe I visited one time. I leave it there. I'm gone for the whole day. I come back. It's in the exact same spot. No one is touching your stuff. It is like so safe. I've never felt this safe in a place. Not that I felt unsafe other places, but you can feel it. Just like, wow. You know, it's at any time of the night. It's crazy.
You haven't seen the machete wars in Australia at the moment?
Dubai is the ultimate place. Fuck around and find out, right? Like, do you want to spend your summer in a Dubai prison? No, thank you.
Yeah,
they do not mess around. I did show you this sort of intersection. You know, I just saw a reel this week. There's a new development in Dubai. There's the Chelsea Football Club co-brand. So it's a high-rise development that's being built on a new island. They're pumping up partnership with the Chelsea Football Club. The facilities are freaking ridiculous. They did 2.3 billion AED of sales, which is about $1 billion Australian, I believe, in 23 minutes, right? Something interesting, talking about in 23 minutes, $2.3 billion in 23 minutes, right? Something interesting this week I saw, the XRP people will love this one because it's an intersection. I think it's being built on top of XRP. There's a website that you can look at. It's called Mint, M-I-N-T, dot P-R-Y-P-C-O. So P-R-Y-P-C-O.com, mint.P-R-Y-P-C-O.com. It is fractionalized ownership of real estate in Dubai. They're the first country in the world to do this at scale. And you can go in and you can buy into, for example, the developers allocate 3 apartments, 10 apartments to this platform. And then with as little as $1,000, you can buy fractionalized ownership of an apartment. Your distributions from the rental income go straight into your crypto wallet every month. And you have dollar for dollar exposure in upside to the growth of the asset. So think about what that unlocks for young people who want to own, like Eric, the deal that you didn't go ahead with recently that your mate bought you, doubled in value in how long?
2.5 times in 18 months,
right? He just bought another deal for us to look at, which is basically buying whole floors in buildings. But the returns can be that high. They can be like you enter here and then it's double in 5 years. With this fractionalized ownership using this platform I've just quoted to you, and you can go in there and read all about it, this opens up that property market to millions of people around the world who want exposure to real estate, growth, income, everything. It's all done on the blockchain.
One thing we have to remember is the people that they're not just attracting people, right? Dubai is not just attracting the person that's the keyboard warrior on the other end going, yeah, well, you're not going to be paying taxes here anymore. Like they're not attracting those people. They don't want those people. right? They want the refs, they want the Adams, they want the Erics, they want the Marks, they want people that are moving and shaking and doing things, right? And there's another stat, right? Like UK at the moment are losing a massive amount of millionaires, massive, right? When I say massive, it's expected, right, this year, in 2024, 9,500 millionaires, right, are leaving the UK. And the top country where they're going is the UAE. And one of the biggest things, right, three things, tax policy, because of tax policy changes, political and economic uncertainty, and increased tax burden. And there will be a point in time where if countries continue to increase tax and do these types of things and increase the tax burden on people, people will be leaving. And it's not going to be the person, right, that is getting the tax benefit, that is getting the government benefit. It's going to be the people like yourself, Raf, like yourself, Adam, that would be here spending money, making a lot of money, paying a lot of tax, and we're going to lose those high income earners. So eventually, who's going to pay the tax?
And also,
I'll find a way.
And also, it'll be the little guy. It'll be the little guy that's voting for policies they think are in their interest, but are not. And they just don't. They're not educated enough to know. And it's also on top of that, I'm surprised what wasn't on that list was safety, because that's a huge consideration. If you have a family, you're thinking about it. I have a friend here who has 95 properties here in Cyprus, right? And I spoke to him last week. We sat down and had a cigar together. And I said, how are things? What's going on? And he said, dude, I just got back from London. Now, this guy has an apartment in Knightsbridge, London, right? Like next to Harrods. I was in Harrods 4 weeks ago, right? Knightsbridge is incredible. Beautiful, beautiful. It's a 10-minute walk from Buckingham Palace, right? It's stunning. I love the place. So I'm there. He was there 2 weeks ago. He said, I just got back. I went to my place. And he's a rich guy, right? He said, I was at a cafe. He said, you know the cafe outside of Harrods, right opposite? And I'm like, yeah, I know it. Like I had a cake there when I was there. He said, I was meeting my daughter in that cafe. She said, Dad, I want to go buy some things inside. So he opens his wallet, pulled out £100 and gave it to her. He then said, I went around the side, just right in the middle of Knightsbridge to have a cigar. Like that, he had a gun on his back. A guy said, give me a wallet. And he said, there would have been 100 cameras that could see this. I just threw my wallet over my shoulder, took the money, left everything else and ran off. He said, 2 days later, I'm sitting having a coffee right opposite Scotland Yard in London. The guy's sitting there at the lights in his Porsche 911. Dudes pull up on a motorbike, put a gun through the window, steal his watch and his wallet and take off right in front of Scotland Yard. This is happening right now in London. And I was there 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And I'm just like, oh, my God, like this is so sad. And this is what's happening. We're seeing it in Australia. And I would read about this in the Gold Coast Bulletin. I would sit there and read about stories with home invasions and people stealing cars and hitting grandmothers over the head with baseball bats. And what happens? A slap on the wrist, mental health problems. Poor little person had an abusive father and a drug problem. So, you know, we're going to put you on probation for 6 months. Go and do that in Dubai and see how that works out for you. Right. Just see how that goes. Do it in Singapore. Like if you, I saw when I was there in Singapore, an Australian guy got drunk, punched a cab driver, didn't make it out of the airport and was whipped publicly and given lashes for beating up a cab driver. As he should have been. What a dickhead, right? And this is what I think Australians need to start to say, you know what? You want to fuck around with our people. You want to commit violent crime. You want to run people off there like that guy in Melbourne this week who got knocked off his scooter. I don't know if you guys saw that, but the dude in the ute that literally ran him down because he didn't like how the rider was. This sort of shit's got to stop. But this is where places like Dubai are just going, just come here. Like we have laws, you know, we'll look after you. We'll encourage you. We'll help you with your business. We know it's a dust bowl, but we're going to reward you in a whole bunch of other ways if you come here and bring your brains and your innovation. 4.5 million people, and look at what's happening.
And if people think that, you know, becoming a welfare state is going to increase productivity and ambition and all these things, no, it does the complete fucking opposite. And then you get people going out there causing all this grievance. Do we have anything else on the docket, boys? We're going to move on from Dubai. Before we do, should we just give Dubai Department of Economy and Tourism our address to send the
affiliate commissions.
One thing I want to say about this is for anyone who's listening, like Dubai is just one place. There's a lot of other places, but the filter I want you guys to think about is like each city you live in whispers something to you, whether you realize it or not. Like when you're in LA, it's whispering you're not glamorous enough. When you're in Brizzy, at least for me, it whispered, hey, chill out, go to the beach. When I'm in Dubai, it whispers to me, build, build, build. So whatever it is towards your goal, find a city that whispers what you want in the direction you want to go. So be clear on where you want to be in the next, you know, 5 to 8 years, and what city would be conducive to make your goals easier. Like it's the wind in your sails, as opposed to something that's hurting you and pushing you and making it harder for you to reach your goals. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
I love that so much, Raph. That is so beautifully articulated. When I go to Dubai, it whispers, you are so poor. All right. So moving on from that, this, by the way, guys, wasn't so much to say leave Australia and go to Dubai. What this was really trying to do was, at least for me, is to stir up politically in people. Next time you vote, think about this, if you care about the country, right? And if you can't do it through the vote, just, you know, vote with your wallet and leave after that. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff. I'm just hoping Australians become more politically engaged and active in their decisions.
Civil disobedience.
Yeah, just start standing up a little bit. She will be right, mate. It's not going to get us there. Now, the next story I want to touch on quickly before we close this one out. This week, I think it was, or the week before, Commonwealth Bank of Australia became the first Australian company on the stock exchange to reach a valuation of $300 billion, which is a big milestone in the Australian landscape. Eric, maybe you can talk to the story quickly, and then what do you guys
make? Yeah, so I read an article, $300 billion, as you said, the highest valued stock in the ASX ever as a listed company. And to put that in perspective, that is more than Westpac and NAB put together. So you start looking at how much business those guys are doing, starts to put that in perspective. And as well, over the last 12 months, it's actually up 49% as a stock. So not a bad pick over the last 12 months.
Westpac and NAB are third and fifth as well. So they're the third largest and fifth largest by market cap in Australia.
Yeah, many economists.
Five banks.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, many of the economists are saying it's overvalued. They're paying a dividend of about 3.74%, but it just goes to show they're saying that a lot of dumb money is going into CBA now, because it's just, you know, I invested in CBA, it's went up 10%. You've invested in it, and it just this kind of acceleration of value. But when I look at that, It's another thing, you know, where I look at it and go, I'm for all companies to make money, right? Good on Commonwealth Bank for making the $300 billion. But at the same time, I then look at the person that is not being able to afford their mortgage. And it's very, very contradicting. And to be honest with you, it's worrying, right? Because it's really hitting the people's pockets. It really is. You know, even though interest rates are going down, consumer sentiment at the moment in Australia is still not amazing, right? Like I read another article today saying that there was an economist that came out that said that the RBA should decrease the next rate by not 0.25, but 0.35, right? And accelerate to start throwing a bit more money into the market, because growth definitely is down. But then you start reading headlines of CBA at $300 million. You could just imagine the comments on the bottom of that article, right? I don't know what the answer is. I haven't thought about it that long enough, because to be honest with you, it doesn't affect me too much. But anyone that is out there, I'd highly recommend, you know, if you are in strife in regards to, you know, paying a mortgage, give them a ring, right? Tell them that you're looking at other options, and see if they can decrease your rate or not. Because I've had many times in the past where I've given, you know, multiple banks that I'm involved with in different types of investments and said, hey, you know, I'm literally shopping around and I'm getting offers from other banks that are more attractive. What can you guys do? And you'd be surprised. Sometimes there's a 0.1 or a 0.15% of a basis point in there, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for someone that's got, you know, a $500,000 or $1 million mortgage and you start working that out, it's thousands of dollars. It's not hundreds. So
yeah, definitely good advice. Go and shop. I'm, you know, really, I've been thinking this week a bit about the Australia problem with real estate, and we might not have too much time. We've probably got 15 minutes. We could dive into some of this now, but it's a really interesting problem. The more we look at this, and I'm heartbroken genuinely for that, the fact that young Australians now just very, very difficult. I heard a stat from Leith Van Onselen said that it's 10.2 years on average to save a deposit for a young Australian now. That's the average, 10.2 years. Now, real estate grows in this country, well, in Australia, at 7.3% a year long-term growth. So what that 10 years means is that the property price has doubled by the time they save the deposit. Can you see the problem with that, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got this situation where young Australians are taking 10 years to buy an asset that doubles in price during the time. And so the Australian government is faced with this really difficult challenge of what do you do? Like, do you, you know, because what's driving it is you bring in immigrants, because if you take the lid off immigration, you open Australia to the world, and there's always going to be people that can afford to buy the Australian dream when the doors are open to the rest of the world. But for young people coming in, that just leaves them to the side. And so that's going to be interesting to as a thought experiment to really go through. And we're seeing this housing affordability problem, and we're seeing the OECD report we mentioned last week, where we are now biggest decline in the history of the OECD index. Australia has registered this last 12 months the biggest decline in disposable income. They are negative 0.85%. It's never been done before. Australians hold that record. So we have this situation where wages haven't caught up.
That would largely be attributed to those people who do have a mortgage.
Nah, man.
Not those that don't.
No, it's not just that. It's inflation. It's the cost of living generally outside of mortgages as well.
Well, Raf's a perfect example, right? So, Raf, you're 33, right? I consider you a young Australian. We're all, you know, 10 to, you know, 15 years older than you. So, like when you were living in Brisbane, did you ever, you were doing all right, you were a school teacher, then you started selling, you know, buying business, setting up businesses and selling. Let's hear it from you. Who's the person that said, you know, were you renting in Brisbane? Could you afford a deposit, or were you one of the ones that are
afford getting a property? I just couldn't. Mm-hmm. It was the cost of living got so expensive. I mean, I live in Sydney, which is quite expensive, then moved to Melbourne during COVID times. And then that started getting expensive, moved to Brizzy. And then that, like the rental costs are getting so expensive. The cost of anything in Woolies is just like all baked in. It's inflationary, it's transitory, which it's not. Like the fact that Tim Tams can go for $7 to $8 is insane. I remember buying them for $2, and that was only a few years ago, like 3 years ago. So it's just the basic things are so difficult. And for people my age, it's not like they don't want to do it. It's not like they don't see the opportunity. They're just so overwhelmed with the bills that they have currently, with just what their cost of living is like. Adding a mortgage that will, at a stretch, take them, and they'll have to stretch to pay this off in 30 years with their general job, it's impossible. And I just don't know how people who don't own their business or have a side hustle of any kind are even able to just live normal lives without sinking slowly.
They're not living normal lives, Raf. This is the thing. And I tell my wife this all the time, right? You see, like, again, people that are doing well usually hang around with other people that are doing well. That's just the reality, right? Like, the richer you get, most likely, the richer the people that are going to be around you. That's just the reality, right? And I'm not saying that rich people are better than people that are on average income, but at the end of the day, we're always, as humans, trying to push ourselves up. But I'm in the same position as you in that mindset of going, they are not living, Raf, right? Like they are living, that's it, right? They're not experiencing. They're literally paying bills. And I know this, right? Because I talk to them. I was talking to a couple of people this week, right? They both have jobs. They've bought a property back in the day, and they're still finding it, you know, a struggle to make ends meet. And they're trying to look at different avenues, you know, do I learn how to do property deals, or do I set up a business? Like there will be not thousands, not hundreds of thousands, there will be millions of people right now in the Western world that are literally waking up, paying rent, paying food, paying bills, putting their kids in public school because they can't afford private school, and doing it over and over and over again. This is the reality, right? They don't. I know this. I remember owning, right, a manufacturing business when there was a glitch in the banking system and we paid didn't go in on Friday. I then got a call on Monday from two of the workers in the factory that said, I cannot come to work because I don't have enough money to put fuel in my car because I didn't get paid on Friday.
Yeah.
Right. Now, whether that was a lie or not, but I'm telling you, there's some genuine people out there that would be the case. If they didn't get paid on Friday, right, they don't have enough money on Monday. And that, to me, right, is the scariest thing in my mind. And the reason why I do what I do is that thought scares the shit out of me.
What do you guys think the solution is? What do each of you think the solution is to this issue?
Like, firstly, my heart goes out to those people. I was those people. You know what I mean? And the only way I was able to get out of that was, okay, people worried of starting a business or somehow starting a side income or figuring out some other way of earning income because it could go to zero. But if it goes well, it's 10x. So that's asymmetrical risk. You could 10x if it goes well or go zero on that venture that you've gotten. But you're like just above zero at the moment. So the amount of risk you're taking is actually very minimal. I mean, I bet you most people on this call can ask a friend for somebody to stay on their couch if they really needed to, like go back to their parents. So like the risk is not as high as the upside would be. And I think the solution is, especially in Australia, I noticed this, especially moving overseas here in Dubai, is like Aussies aren't utilizing technology the way that it is right now. Like it is so much easier right now to be able to start and validate a business and get money through the door to begin with than ever before. But like, it's just not shared. Like I was a primary school teacher. I know we weren't teaching the stuff that we needed to prepare these kids to be able to get, you know, ready for this world that we're living in right now. So, I mean, that would be the start of the solution for me.
I think Mark, the solution is what it's always been, education and side hustles and things like that. Like, because our money's broken, and this is why I keep banging the Bitcoin drum, is because our money is broken, this is where it all stems from, it puts everybody on the risk scale and you have to start to go up the risk scale. You've got no choice because if you hold your money, you're going to lose it. It's going to go broke even if you do nothing with it. A great example, I chatted with Raf. I had a separate call with Raf at 6 a.m. this morning and we were talking about a client of his. This lady's in her 40s and she has started a business where she's doing a print-on-demand product on Amazon, which enabled her to not have to have any money for inventory. So basically she has an Amazon listing page and when somebody goes and buys it, Amazon print the book and send it. So she has no money at risk. She went and studied with Raf and the team and learned how TikTok shop works in America. This woman's in Brisbane, Raf. She's in Brisbane. Yeah. Okay. And how old roughly do you think she is?
I think like 45 maybe.
45, never been on TikTok before, studied with Raf, learned TikTok shop in America, driving the traffic to an Amazon page. What have her sales been in the last little bit?
Last 30 days, she's hit 1.1
million. 1.1
million
from Brisbane with no investment in inventory because she made an investment in intelligence. And that's the future, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so I feel that people are too complacent with how seriously they approach education. Mark, you've said before, when you study something, you'll watch a YouTube video and you'll have ChatGPT open next to you and you'll stop the YouTube video. And if you don't understand something, you'll say, hey, ChatGPT, can you explain this to me? And then you'll go down the rabbit hole, ChatGPT, before moving on with the video to understand that concept. This is the difference.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. It's what intelligent people do.
And I think like there's another one that I want to put on there. So education, collaboration, and taking action. Collaboration to me is very, very underutilized. And at the end of the day, if you can't afford to do something or you only have a certain amount of money, there's going to be other people that are in the same boat, right? Find those people. Right. Or find the people with the money that will invest in you. Or if you have the money, find the person that will, you know, create the idea, capital, execution. That's what we teach. That's what we talk about all the time. Right. And this is what we do in the community. Right. We collaborate together. My mate rings me from Dubai. right? He says, hey, I've got this opportunity. I ring other mates that I know that are in the property space and say, hey, I've got this opportunity. That is collaboration, all right?
We do it collaboration, through the WhatsApp
group. Correct, right? The collaboration is only good, is taking action. I didn't take action on that property 18 months ago because you can't action everything, right? We took action on other things. But let me tell you, when he tells me it's went up 2.5 times in 18 months, it's like,
ooh. That's got to stink.
Because the other thing that I invested in, right, didn't go up that as much. But again, the key is you're still taking action, right? And that's a big thing that people won't do. They'll sit there and fill their head with podcasts and read 1,000 books. I'll tell you right now, I know Adam's an avid reader. I know Mark reads a lot. I've never been a big reader, right? Like I don't know if it's ADD or like I feel like sometimes I read, but nowhere near like this level of reading that these guys do. Dan Turner, my business partner at MX, Jake, all big readers, right? So, but for someone that hasn't read probably a 10% of what someone else has read, I'm still taking action. That is the key. Once you start getting educated, education's great. I know so many people that are so much more educated than me that are way worse off. So don't get confused on becoming just educated and listening to podcasts and doing nothing. At some point, you got to put your balls on the line.
A good example of that is like we are testing something that we're going to be sharing on the Freedom Summit, which we'll probably next week announce a link for you to go and do it. Raph's going to be part of the Freedom Summit. It's going to raise money for charity. We're not making money from it. But we are testing the strategy. I've got a private chat group with 8 of us in it, and I'm moderating it. So I'm saying, like this morning, one of the guys put in some meme or something. I said, dude, not the place. We don't do that in here. This is specifically for this particular subject matter. Every day I'm posting my actual results. Like yesterday I made $5,500. The day before I lost $3,000. So I'm showing like the actual real world results. And then I did a call with a company that I'm partnering with in Dubai that's managing the strategy for me. And I recorded the call and I passed the notes on to the guys. And we are sharing real world information in real time about things we're really doing. And if somebody's in the group making a comment that's irrelevant or not based on context or experience, we're calling it and saying, no, guys, this is what we're doing. So this is how you proactively move. And I'm sure with you, Raph, you're the same. You've got TikTok groups that you're in and there's WhatsApp groups, but they've got to be well-run, purpose-driven.
And I'm in that group, right, Adam? I'm in that group, right? And I'm adding zero value in that group, but I'm learning a shit ton at the moment just by reading the comments and listening to the videos. And eventually, you know, I'll be taking the plunge as well, right? But I just can't commit at the moment because time right now for me is scarce. But when I look at that, I'm like, I'm absorbing all this information. So just get around it, you know?
Let's make it really practical for people that are just hanging out with their high school mates or uni mates, and they just haven't had a chance to like, how do I get around these people? Easiest way is go on either Facebook groups or meetup.com and go to these meetups, like in person. The amount you can get from a 10-minute in-person conversation versus a common thread on Reddit or Facebook, it's completely different. Like, just do that. So when I started down this journey, I was a full-time primary school teacher, knew no one in this space. All my mates were from uni, from high school, doing none of this. Actually, a lot of them got pissed when I started going down this path because it was just different to what they were doing. And so I just looked up on meetup.com and I was just like, okay, here's this random event. That event that I went to absolutely sucked. It was terrible. But there was a guy outside of that event who was arguing with this lady who went to this event and was about like how doctors are going to be replaced by this machine thing. Anyways, he was intense, but interesting. So I'm like, hey, mate, she's not going to understand. Let's have a chat because you seem interesting. Started talking and he said, tomorrow there's another event. You should come to this. And just purely by being there, increasing my opportunity density, I got invited to that. And then I had an entirely new network of friends just by going to that thing. And it wasn't even the actual event I went to. It was outside the event. So you just got to be out there, man.
I'm speaking at the next Bitcoin meetup in Limassol. I'm the keynote speaker because I turned up at 2 events and sat around and had coffees with people. And now I know all the top Bitcoiners in Limassol in, you know, 2 meetings. Done. So you just got to make this effort. And I think, Mark, the answer is increase your opportunity density, you know, take a more structured and serious approach to your learning and your education, and understand what Raph said there. This is a asymmetric return. People overestimate the downside. The downside is actually not. It's you end up in your mum's couch for 3 or 6 months. The real downside is you get nowhere for two decades because you never had the courage to actually have a crack at something and go and have a go. Because the world we are living in, it used to be that you financed only your house. Then, okay, they introduced car finance. Then they introduced credit cards so you could help you pay for your clothes. Now, millions of Americans, which I believe is a leading indicator of the way the West is going, are using Buy Now, Pay Later to pay for their groceries. That's actually real. It's something like 20% of Americans are using Buy Now, Pay Later, Afterpay, to pay for their meat, for their groceries, because they can't even afford to pay for that. That is the world that we are moving into. So you have to fight your hands on your life, which is why you listen to Unemployable. So this isn't you.
Yeah. You only know what you know. And most of the stuff that we've learned has been from our parents, our family, the way we've been raised and what we've seen through the eyes of a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, 15-year-old, 20-year-old, right? And a lot of it is because they were raised in the same way and they don't know what they don't know. And it's you turn on the news, you listen to the news, you get very, very fearful and you create a scarcity mindset. And then you end up being 40 or 50 or 60 years old going, oh my God, right? And the reality is you've been wired that way. So it's going to be very difficult to unwire that, but bit by bit by bit. And I was in a very scarce mindset. Like that's the way I was raised. Not saying that it was, you know, a good thing or a bad thing. It's just that's the way it was. My parents loved me. They did everything for me, but they weren't educated in that space. And this is why what we're trying to do is bring people on, talk about these types of things. Like you look at Raf, I'm sure he was scared shitless going, see you later, closing my bank account, going to Dubai, don't know a couple people probably, you know, in a city that I've been to,
I didn't know anyone,
you know, once, right? And here we are. I did the same thing. Adam's done the same thing. You know, Mark's, everyone on this call right now, right, has done something like that. I came from Canada to Australia, knowing nobody. You went from Australia to Dubai, knowing nobody. Adam went to LA, right? Probably a few contacts, still, right? And made a big decision going there. Cyprus, he wouldn't have known anybody in Cyprus.
Zero.
Mark moved from Melbourne, right? Where all his family is, and his missus's family, and they have a young daughter, and I can't be away from this. This is what people say, how? I couldn't be away from her. No. And now he's living in Byron Bay, going, I should have done it before. That is taking action. So anyone listening to this, that's what you need to do. Be comfortable with the uncomfortable. Because I'm telling you right now, I am uncomfortable every fucking day. I am uncomfortable. Let me tell you, my sphincter is like this every day. And I love every minute of it, right? I love every minute of it.
I'm so glad I now know about your sphincter, Eric. That's really made my day. Raf.
I'm just being open and honest.
No, right? I love it. I love it.
Maybe not open enough by the sounds of it.
move the bar and they'll open you up.
Don't tell me
you're Mark's down there. Mark's
you
down
know it's sunny. Pride. You know it's Pride Month.
Right? Mark, if I catch you sunning your sphincter in Byron, I'm going to have to kick you off the pod.
Dude, have you read the reports? Like testosterone.
Mate, I don't care how high it goes, dude. It's just not happening. Levels are
higher. His testosterone, bro. He's tanning his sphincter that much.
I'm tanning it. Don't worry about that.
Mate, you know what, Raf?
I'm here for the expertise.
His test is so high. He shaved yesterday, bro.
Okay, well, I'm
those of you make... got that, can't, that those are the guys that are listening and not watching. He's got a big beard at the moment.
Now that we've got a picture of Mark sunning his taint in the Byron sunshine, it's a great note to end on. But I want to end on just that last thing that Raf, one of the last things Raf said, find a place that whispers something to you that is aligned with your goals. I love that quote so much, man. I think you're such a quotable dude, and we really appreciate you coming on to the pod. And we wish you every success in Dubai, man. Like, honestly, like, you're going to have your haters, but the silent majority are cheering for you, brother. And you've got an Australian wife there that you are building a life with, and you know, we are just wishing you all the very, very best, and we hope you come home rich and prosperous and sowing back into the community back in home when you get that done in your life, when you are post money, which will be on its way to you soon.
The unemployable crew are coming to visit very soon, my friend, very soon.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be there, bro. Looking forward. And I by the way, I love downtown. That's my favorite part of Dubai. I love that downtown area. It's phenomenal. Ooh, So we'll be there in a couple of months. We'll come see you. We'll maybe do a podcast from the RAF co-working space in Dubai.
Let's do it. That sounds great.
Thanks, all right, guys. Thank you. Thank you for watching, listeners. If you are enjoying the show, please like, subscribe, and comment. And definitely please tell your friends, because that's how the show grows and how we get the word out and get more people to come on. And we'll have info about the Online Freedom Summit in the coming week or so. I suspect the next Friday pod will have a link ready for you. You can come and learn from people like Raf and what we're doing in the background. And Mark's going to be a guest, a whole bunch of really cool speakers. We've got one guy coming on who's a mate of ours who made $1 million in one night from his trading. And he's going to be sharing that crazy story. He's not a speaker. He's never done this kind of thing before. He's just a highly intelligent Australian larrikin who made $1 million that night and went down the pokies the next day and had a few beers to unwind. So you're going to enjoy learning from him as well. It's going to be a great event. With that said, guys, until next week, bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.